This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
This Scotland Outdoors podcast from BBC Radio Scotland.
Hello, and thanks very much for choosing to listen to this. I'm Mark Stephen. I don't know about you, but I'm one of those folk that is essentially solar-powered. Come the winter time, when basically the nights get much, much longer and the days get much, much shorter, my energy levels really go down. You know, that's not necessarily a problem. There's nothing wrong with sleeping longer. But for some people, the symptoms are much more serious than that. SAD, seasonal affective disorder. Now, a group of academics from Edinburgh and Glasgow universities have been running something called Wintering Well workshops, culminating in a booklet called Light is a Right, The Guide to Wintering Well. I met up with them in Glasgow. There's quite a few of them. Professor Hayden Lorimer was one of those taking part.
This is a project where we are interested in people's experience, lived experience of seasonal affective disorder, which is a condition that affects up to 3% of the UK population. And the further you go up the British Isles and the higher the latitude, said that more people than that are affected by this. And that can be a whole range of different symptoms. It's lowered mood, it can be a sense of social isolation, a lack of energy in winter time, and just a general feeling of everyday life being something of a challenge. Now, as a research project, we're interested in actually how that feels for people on a day-to-day basis and getting a sense of, first of all, how it feels, the challenges that they face, and then what we've been spending time doing is trialling ways to make people feel a little bit better about themselves feeling seasonally affected.
Hester, are you a researcher or a sufferer?
That's a very good question. I came to Scotland and took up a job in Dundee on the East Coast, and I felt that I was getting on fine there. Beautiful winters, crisp, cold, big blue skies in winter. And because of family reasons, I moved over to Glasgow, got a job in Glasgow University, and became really suddenly aware of the very different levels of light here. And I didn't expect that. It was nothing that I'd experienced before. Mm-hmm. And I was really taken aback and struck by the effect on my mental health, I suppose, every winter. And I've been very aware of it ever since. I've been here now in Glasgow for about 15 years, and that was really one of the reasons that I was really interested in devising or co-designing this project with Hayden and others, our lovely team, in order to try and find a way to positively intervene in that annual experience that felt a little bit difficult. And also, obviously, my own academic background is looking at the relationship between mental health and place. So I'm bringing all of that into this project, and it's been a really amazing experience, not only, I think, for the people in the workshop, but also for me. I think I've changed my own relationship with winter as a result of taking part in this.
In what way?
In that the workshops have taught our participants, ourselves included, to get outside more, notice more about the light. When we think about winter, we often think of it as a dark time. And for those who are on what you might call a sad spectrum, then the anticipation of that is really psychologically difficult. And you go into winter expecting everything to be gloomy and grey and just something to get through. And now I think that we are encouraged, and our programme encourages people to look again at winter, to kind of re-encounter it as a physical reality and a psychological state, if you like. We are looking for the light. We have light all of the time in winter. It's not just dark, and it's about kind of training yourself to be out in light and to notice it. And that does make a difference. It helps.
One of the team is Alec Finley, poet and artist. Alec, what has been your role in this? I mean, you know, what have you brought to the entire project?
I don't experience sad, but my work in recent years has been a series of experiments really around how vulnerability contains wisdom. So it was an enormous privilege and comfort, actually, to spend time with this group over winter. And I think that when you bring people together who experience a particular set of vulnerabilities, symptoms, you start by describing them. And when you all share your description, somehow that naturally gathers an energy for change. And I remember halfway through the sessions just noticing that people had started laughing, mm-hmm. and their heads were up and they were happy to be together. And I think probably it's the experience of knowing that you're believed. So you're in a room of people that have the same experience. And so my job was really to listen and write down what people said. Sometimes people don't realise how special or beautiful what they say is. So the project became light as a right because someone said that. And that, to me, defines the moment where the vulnerability shifts into a claim on the world. Mm-hmm. And we didn't end the project by kind of going, all right, each of us as individuals feel better. The culmination was really a decision to redesign the city of Glasgow according to that vulnerability. So instead of thinking negatively about suffering and the lack of light, we would see that if we live by seasonal rhythms, we're happier. Mm-hmm. Think about how work changed in the pandemic, and actually for some people became more flexible. If we respect our vulnerabilities, they often become empowering. So we began to think about lighting, architecture, street design, as well as our own needs, as well as not my needs, but other people's needs. Do you see what I mean? You get an interesting cumulative energy. Maybe a good word for it would be generative.
Yeah.
Can I read you a little bit of the poem?
Please, yeah, thank you.
I'll say one thing about this poem. I love this poem, and it's not mine. So what is wonderful about making work like this is it's a very collective thing, and it doesn't belong to any of us, it belongs to all of us. And I remember when I read it that everyone had a good cry. Light is a right. We want our warm arse benches. Light is a right. We want our sit-outeries and stargazer recliners. Light is a right. We want our streets lined with sad lamps and sunflowers. Light is a right. We want high places, long views and far horizons. Light is a right. We want guerrilla plantings, urban crofts and glamorous late-night buses. Light is a right. We want their fire and their fire and their fire to be our fire. Light is a right because winter, you make the frostbite, the colours vibrate and force us to feel intensely. Light proves we're never alone. Light makes our vulnerabilities a promise of warmer, brighter homes, a seasonal recalibration of labour, flexible working hours, and even, just imagine, a Scotland that's fit for its weather for everyone.
That's a lovely, lovely series of images and things. Wonderful expressions. And as you say, it's a collective effort. You know, it's what people felt, it's what they gave to, what they shared with the group, essentially.
Catherine.
So this is our sky frame. So this is one of the experiments that we had in the workshop. So we take it up to the sky and in no particular place, and we're noting, making observations about what we see and what we feel with what we see, and we're trying to engage with the light and the surroundings and try to find a positive, perhaps, notion about what we're seeing and bringing awareness to what we see as well.
Okay, you basically got the kind of mount that would go around a picture. Mm-hmm. You're staring through essentially a rectangle. Mm-hmm. Describe what you're seeing through that rectangle at the moment.
So we're here in Kelvin Grove Park in the upper path, so it's quite shaded. So we're seeing the transition at the moment. We've got, I'd say, half the leaves are the lime green still, half of them are turning to brown. Part of my frame's got some of the path in it, so we're seeing the leaves on the ground, and we can just see the sky out the corner. So this is kind of the most interesting part for us, the how we describe that grey. And maybe some of that white light that's over there in the corner just peeking through. Today it is, it's an optimistic grey. It's not the worst I've seen.
I've never heard that phrase before. It's an optimistic grey.
I'll be generous.
Did you come up, I mean, aside from the book, which is lovely, and there's some very nice images in that, did you come up with any strategies, any sort of definitive things you can do that actually help?
A whole series of different exercises. So the book contains little invitations to practice. And Catherine gave you one example, you know, building up a relationship with a patch of sky. Other things that we have suggested people might want to experiment with are writing a letter to winter itself. Mm-hmm. Yes, writing a letter to the season and venting.
There's times when mine would be quite short.
And we might need to censor it. We've also suggested that people might want to think about making a winter room of their own making. Just a little bit of interior redesign, not requiring a big budget, but actually thinking about the use of reflective surfaces, mirrors, lighting. They can just shift the tone or the atmosphere in a room. Another exercise invited people to step outside and to make a wee winter place of their own, where just for a few minutes a day, perhaps, maybe in the back garden, maybe in the local park, you find, well, your own wee situtery where you can just take in the light, take in the view. All of those are, they're not rocket science. They're just perfectly simple little exercises, but individually and cumulatively, you bring those together and they can have a really positive impact on the way that people feel across winter time. So we've done all of that and it's all contained in that wee book. We've also created a toolkit for people if they're interested in being self-starters for their own wintering well group. And the toolkit gives you just a series of little building blocks if you want to organise, self-start and bring together your own little gang of folk.
Esther talked about the sad spectrum, and I think what's very interesting about the book is it really would help anyone. Obviously, it's particularly helpful for people that self-define as experiencing sad, but a lot of the things in it are acts of self-care that would help anyone get through the Scottish winter.
One of the things that struck me, because I've read through the book, and there are photocopies of, they look like little letters that people have put together and things, very modest ambitions. Well, there was one particularly who said, you know, I says, I just want somewhere to sit out in the back garden, you know, and maybe have a fire pit and cover my legs with blankets and things like that. And it doesn't sound like much, but it helps.
Absolutely. And when you are feeling low in winter, when you are really depressed in times of low light, then those really everyday things can seem a lot harder to do. So they are small acts, but they are very profound acts that make a difference.
Acts of kindness to yourself.
Yes, yes, they are. And we've also worked with Living Life to the Full, which is a CBT-led organisation.
Better explain that. Cognitive behavioural therapy.
That's right, cognitive behavioural therapy. And we've worked with Chris Williams, who is a professor of psychosocial psychiatry, who worked with our team and has used some of the resources and the insights from the workshop to build a supported educational module for to help people walk through winter in a different way. So we've got different kinds of resources that suit different kinds of people. So there will definitely be many, many people, indeed everyone, who would benefit from the book led by Alec. There are certain kinds of people who perhaps need more kind of structured guidance to how to get through winter, and they're the living life to the full module, the educational module, will help support people through winter. And then obviously there's those people who actually just like to be with others, or we're prompting people that there's great benefits to be with others, and that's where our community toolkit can come in handy.
Catherine, I mean, you are an engineer to trade. Would it be possible to rebuild our environment in such a way that it would help? I mean, it could be expensive, surely.
One of our experiments in our workshop was to come up with a plan to re-engineer our local area, and I loved it. And I live in the east end of Glasgow on a hill, and I completely took it apart and came up with so many, like a sunset gazing bench, and just re-engineered the levels and the light, and some of the elements of that made its way into Alec's poem. And I do think it's possible. It was amazing, even everyone else in the workshop, the ideas that they came up with about how to rejig their local area. And even things like having the street lamps to be sad lamps, you know, such a seemingly simple thing. I think you could do it, yeah.
It was very playful. And that was very, it was a very liberating moment. Mm-hmm. Something about the rhythm of the workshops. When it started, people were more subdued because they were coming with their own private vulnerability. But that workshop especially was full of laughter. Mm-hmm. But I think there's a political point behind that, that I claim quite strongly that Scottish people are not very good at being in Scotland. If you go to Scandinavia, Scandinavia is adapted to its weather. It has an architecture that makes sense. And we don't. And I think there's a kind of intrinsic alienation still in Scotland about how we live here. Our homes have not really been designed around our needs. They've been designed around power, money, capitalism, whatever you want to call it. So that radical, playful, poetic revisioning of your neighbourhood, there's something incredibly powerful about it.
I also...
Why not?
I couldn't agree more, but
make
I also...
Make Catherine the mayor.
I also get the strongest impression that people want to be able to enjoy their environment. I mean, last year, we cycled from Edinburgh to Glasgow and we ended up at the basins at Mary Hill there, where they've just built two beautiful new bridges and what have you. People were using the bridges, yes, but people were coming there just to watch the sun go down behind the high-rise flats to the south. Mm-hmm. You know, people want to do that. There's something, I don't know, it's primitive, atavistic, don't know.
I think that's a lovely, you give us a lovely sense of the relatability of light. It is an incredibly immaterial thing, yet it is absolutely fundamental to our existence. There is an ecology of light that once we remind ourselves of it, it can have really profound impacts on day-to-day living. So yeah, I think all of that and more. Let's have it.
There are so many good ideas contained within this, and you've obviously thought so clearly about it. Would it be possible to run this out to, I don't know, local authorities, educational institutions, you know, whatever it is? Because there's lots of people out there that would benefit from this.
Well, we do actually want to, with modesty, start a national conversation on SAD and our relationship with light, particularly in Scotland, but this is applicable to all of the UK. Indeed, one of the first things we did was put out what we called a big SAD survey back in 2022, and we got responses from all over the country talking about this problematic relationship with light and people asking what they can do, how they can live better with the light available to them. And so, yeah, I think it's part of what we should be thinking about in terms of design, and kind of there's a lot of revisioning going on now in towns and cities right through the country in response to and an anticipation of climate change. And so it seems to me that maximizing our exposure to light and thinking about SAD as something that might affect more of us in the future because of climate change would be really, really important and part of that national conversation, and should indeed be taken into account by people visioning our urban and rural spaces.
I think also what's interesting about a project like this is the resources were made by people with SAD. They created it. we collaborated with them, and the more we could have what you might call illnesses that are hard to treat, even hard to define, it's patients that should define them. You start by describing it, and that was what the first workshops were, simply to describe how we saw those different greys. And I don't think a phrase like an optimistic grey would necessarily have come up. So it came out of a shared conversation. Yeah. So we've made the resource available. It's up to the councils to come back to the people that made it. Sometimes we get caught up in this country in having to work through large organisations, when actually the best way is to go to the people with the experience. And I think every single illness should have a description made by its own sufferers, patients. There's something, you learn an incredible amount. In effect, you create a kind of Maggie Centre for every illness. And that's how I would see this, that it's like that. It's a written resource because, and it's about looking and it's about light. So it's not cancer, it's a different thing, but it's the same idea that acts of care change your relationship to your own symptoms.
Could I ask a question collectively of everybody who's been involved with us? And it probably sounds slightly hokey. There are lots of academic projects. There are lots of things that people set out to do, and, you know, there's natural curiosity and things, and some of them are scientific-based and what have you. I suspect this is quite an unusual project because it's got not just a feel-good element to it. You know you're actually doing good by doing it. Is that a reasonable assessment?
I think so, yeah. I think the lovely thing about it is that it's arts-led, but it's deeply applied. And there's a great value in inviting people to work with their artistic side, in getting them to find their own language, to find their own images, and then showing the power in that kind of material. So the arts are a deeply applied thing for us to work with in everyday life.
The voices there of Professors Hayden Lorimer and Hester Parr, project co-leads, collaborating artist Alec Finlay, and Catherine, who is a member of the Wintering Well participant group. My thanks, in fact, to everyone involved in Light is a Right, a Guide to Wintering Well. Please get in touch and tell us where you listen to this podcast. It's always interesting to find out. You can email us at outofdoors@bbc.co.uk. Until the next time, I'm Mark Stephen. Thanks for listening.
Gail Katz told friends she was leaving her husband, Bob, then went missing. On season one of The Girlfriends, Bob's ex-girlfriends came together to bring him down and seek justice.
I can't believe this.
Now on season two, host Carol Fisher is back, working to solve the mystery of another missing woman.
It's almost like it's become this, you know, moral obligation to find her.
Listen to The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, and start listening.